Is Huntington Group versus Jaytun Contractors. Again, this case is Huntington Group versus Jaytun Contractors, and Mr. Smeal, you may make your argument.
Could I reserve 3 minutes, please? Please, the court. Aaron Smeal for the appellant. Judges, this is a case that began as a, well, it stayed, a breach of contract claim. It was filed by the appellee as a breach of contract. It was filed back in February 2016. Sometime in 2018, I don't know exactly when, I came in, substituted in for the, who's now the appellant, the defendant. And in December of 2018, based on discovery that had been done up to that point, we got leave from the court and filed an amended answer and included a counterclaim. That was December 19th of 2018. In March, on March 31st, 2021, this case was, a dismissal order was entered. And essentially what happened is that on February 19th of 2021, the Lancaster County District Court entered an order to show cause. And that order directed the plaintiff, specifically says, the plaintiff's given 30 days to show cause, otherwise why this case should not be dismissed. Plaintiff didn't show cause. That's the appellant, who was a defendant at that time, admittedly also didn't take any action. Then the order for dismissal comes down, so the appellee, the plaintiff, was told to show cause, didn't. Then the order comes down 30 days later and states specifically that there being no response to the order to show cause, the complaint filed on February 10th, 2016 is dismissed. That's what the court did. It dismissed the February 10th, 2016 complaint. So after that, the appellant filed a, and then the clerk's entry though on the docket made the case inactive as though it were a total dismissal, as if the case were done, completed. The court's order of dismissal didn't address the counter-complaint, didn't specify that the counter-complaint was or was not dismissed. So based on that, we asked the court, the appellant asked the court to return the case to the active docket and to set a trial date. And the district court heard that motion. The plaintiff set forth its reasons for requesting that reinstatement in its motion. The court heard argument and denied without explanation, really. The order just said motion denied. So the issue, there's a couple of issues. One is jurisdictional. The court picked up on that right away before he even briefed it at the outset and said, explain to us how I have jurisdiction. The March 31st, 2021 order was not a final appealable order. It simply wasn't. Because under 1315, it didn't dispose of all the issues. So at that time, when the appellant asked the court to set what remained of the case for trial or to return the case to the active docket so the balance of the issues could be heard, and the court refused to do that, that it was a final appealable order. And that's under, that's pursuant to 1902(1)(1)(a).
Was it a motion to reinstate the case?
Well, it was styled as a motion to vacate. I think it was a motion to vacate and reinstate and to set trial date. I think it had reinstate in the motion.
But the counterclaim never needed to be reinstated because it was never dismissed, right?
I agree. It didn't need to be reinstated because it never had been dismissed. But we couldn't take any action on the claim because it was showed as close. We couldn't do anything. And so really, I think the portion where the real error stands is in the failure to give the counterclaimant, the appellant, the trial date to allow us to proceed on the claim. So when the court said, no, as of this moment, when I'm denying your motion, I'm closing the door to you, that started the statute of limitations. That was the final appealable order with respect to the appellant, because under 2519.02(1), we were then foreclosed from taking any action. It disposed of the claim, and that's really the standard. And so they kind of overlap, right? The error and the jurisdictional issue overlap. Because if the first order, well, the first order can't be a final order because the court would have had to have said that under 1315. It would have had to have said, this is a final order. And the court did the opposite. It didn't just enter a general order. It was very specific as to what it was dismissing. So that was not the order that precluded the appellant from being able to pursue its claim. It was the order when the court refused to reopen the case, reactivate the case, so to speak, to return it to the active docket so that a trial could be set.
Was the court treating that March order of dismissal as a dismissal of the entire case?
I don't know that there's another way to interpret it, really. I don't see how you could interpret it any other way. We don't have the court's findings. If the ruling on the motion to reinstate the case and to set a trial date were more specific and it said, no, this order was dismissed everything, we'd have an entirely different appeal because as a practical matter, then we have issues under, you know, Local Rule 3.8 and other statutes that say if you're going to dismiss a case on progression, you have to issue a show cause and allow them to respond. There was no show cause issued as to the defendant's counterclaim ever. Now that's not really here before the court because that's not how it went down. But as a practical matter, to answer your question, I believe that the trial court treated the March 31st order as a final order disposing of all claims when on its face and by operation of statute, it is not. It's not a final order because it didn't dismiss the counterclaim. So once we asked the court to reinstate it and they didn't, then that's when the error arises. And so then we say, okay, well, what's the analysis? What's the court supposed to look at when we ask them to reinstate? Let's assume it was dismissed. What was the court supposed to analyze? We don't know what it did analyze, but what it was supposed to look at are a number of things, like how far into the case, is the case ready for trial? The indication in the motion was that it was. We know that experts were done, the experts have been deposed, that the appellant said in its motion, we're prepared to go to trial. The other thing that is important is that by not reinstating it, it terminated my client's claim by operation of statute of limitations. We couldn't refile it. This isn't a $85 filing fee and we start over. It terminated. And the courts have said, that the Nebraska Supreme Court has said, that that's a consideration. And the other thing that's interesting is, had the court done the opposite on the motion to reinstate and had reinstated it, that would not be a final appealable order. Mm-hmm. It's only the denial of a motion to reinstate a case that's appealable.
What about the case law that opposing counsel has brought to our attention that orders denying a motion to reinstate are not final and appealable if they don't decide new matters, if the motion doesn't present new matters for decision?
Well, I don't think that applies because we weren't even asking for a new matter to be decided. Mm-hmm. If we had made a motion to reinstate the case and the original order had dismissed all claims, plaintiffs and defendants' claims, and then we come in and we make a motion to reinstate and our claims have been dismissed, then I think that would apply, but that's not what happened here. And I still don't think that it affects jurisdiction so far, insofar as you're required to appeal within 30 days. I would still, if I waited beyond the 30 days to, well, 30 days from the original order, when the court enters its order on the motion to reinstate, I have to appeal within those 30 days. Right. But if we're not 30 days within the first order, then if we appeal the first one, it's did the court abuse its discretion in dismissing. We appeal the second one, it's did the court abuse its discretion in not reinstating. And they're different. You know, one would be if it's a statutory interpretation, right, we're looking at it de novo. If it's a failure to reinstate, it's abuse of discretion. So I would say I don't think that those cases in this situation, I think they're an opposite. I don't think they apply to the facts here at all.
You had indicated factors that the court was supposed to look at, such as how far into the case were we, what discovery had been done. Where are you getting those factors?
Those factors are...
Not necessarily what they are, but are they statutory? Yeah. Do they come from case law?
Case law primarily. If we look at... there's a couple of cases, and these weren't ones that were cited because we didn't specifically argue that because we didn't think that any analysis was really done. But Fritzen v. Fritzen, that's an not designated case, but that was in 2000, this court in 2000. And let's see, having to do with the statute of limitations, that issue, which the court has said is very important, is Guchevsky versus Ready Mix. That goes all the way back to 1985.
Do you have a citation for that?
I do. That would be 219 Neb 803. That's and then that a more recent case that cites that again. And Fiddler has this Fiddler case is important for us here. Fiddler versus LifeCare. It tells us a number of things. And Fiddler is 301 Neb 724. And that also points out, and that stands for the proposition that denying it is appealable, final and appealable, not denying it is not final and appealable. But ultimately, there really was no dismissal to vacate. We should have been given a trial date. That's the error. I see I've used all my time.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Weeks.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Weeks, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Huntington Group. It's our contention that the order that the lower court entered on March 31st, dismissing the case against all parties and all causes of actions, was a final appealable order, which Jaytun failed to appeal in a timely manner. As noted in the court's order to show cause, which is in front of you at page 74 of the transcript, the court says failure to comply will result in the case being dismissed. Therefore, as of that order, which was issued in February, all parties were on notice that the entire case would be dismissed if no action was taken. Section 25.13.15 provides the statutory framework for perfecting an interlocutory appeal. The intent of that was to prevent piecemeal litigation unless the lower court determined that such appeal was necessary for the improved administration of justice and to prevent injustice or hardship on the parties and the delay of an entry of a final judgment. There was no partial motion for summary judgment that the court considered in this case, as was the facts and circumstances that was presented to the court in Clausen versus LOL Investments in the TDP Phase 1 case.
Ms. Weeks, would you agree, though, the show cause order talked about the case being dismissed?
The entire case.
But then the order, the actual order of dismissal, only dismisses the complaint.
Says the complaint, we would argue that, and definitely by the court's subsequent order in June, that the court considered the entire case to be dismissed. For all practical purposes, the defendant is also the plaintiff on their counterclaim, so we would say that it could be read broadly enough to include the counterclaim being dismissed in that, even though the court
just... The order to show cause actually... only says the plaintiff is getting through.
The plaintiff has to take the action. However, it talks about the entire case being dismissed. And so the defendant had the opportunity at that time to respond to the order to cause, which they did not. They had the opportunity to appeal that order, which it did not, in any timely phase. With regard to the 25.13.15, we contend that that statute with regard to all parties being adjudicated, and there was no adjudication in this case, so we're contending that that statute really doesn't apply in this case.
But don't we have cases that apply that statute that say if the order says the complaint is dismissed, that doesn't address the third party complaint, therefore we don't have a final order and we dismiss for lack of jurisdiction?
Well, I was reading the TDP case and the cases that come from that, and that talks about the adjudication of fact, which there was none in this case. And that it only, and since it was dismissed for want of prosecution, that then you have to look, was there a final appealable order, which we contend there was when the court dismissed the case in March, and therefore they had 30 days to appeal that, which they did not, or they could have taken action to file a motion to alter or amend to clarify, is our cause of action dismissed or is it still pending? I think the court looked at the timeline of this case. Mr. Schmiel entered his appearance in July of 2018. He filed a motion for leave to file the amended complaint September of 2018, and that was then filed in December of 2018. No action was taken in the case from 2018 until the order to show cause in February of 2021. So the court was well within its discretion to determine that for lack of prosecution on both parties' side, that the case should be dismissed.
But isn't it also likely, possible, that the trial court then, when it went to enter its order of dismissal, realized it was just the plaintiff that had been directed to show cause and therefore limited the dismissal just to the complaint and not to the counterclaim.
I realize that the hearing of June 25th, 2021 is not before this court. That was never addressed at that hearing. And actually, the motion to reinstate, which is filed by J-Ton, talks about reinstatement of the entire case. They don't talk about just their counterclaim. They don't even mention the fact that the court still has jurisdiction of the counterclaim potentially, or that the court was error in dismissing or the whole case as opposed to just the counterclaim. That's not mentioned in the motion to reinstate. In fact, the motion to reinstate specifically says they want to reinstate the entire case to the docket, and that there was no adjudication on the merits, but rather it was dismissed for want of prosecution. So we say that plays into our argument that the whole case was dismissed. It wasn't a case where there was an interlocutory appeal or decision just to some of the parties on some of the facts. We also contend that the June 25th, 2021 order denying the motion to reinstate was not an independent final appealable order under the court's decisions in Capital and McEwen. This case is distinguished from Capital because there's no new intervening manner as there was in Capital in this case, but rather this case is more akin to the court's decision in Green versus Seifert, where she argued, the court determined that she was really arguing her argument on the denial of the motion to vacate. She's really contending that the original order before that was what they were doing. That's what we contend happened in this case. The court has jurisdiction to review. They were arguing you can review the underlying March 31st order by reviewing the motion to reinstate. But there's no intervening manner. No new facts were presented, as in Capital, where the clerk made an error in sending out the notice and didn't send appellate counsel. So there's your new facts that the court then considered. Nothing like that is in this particular case. Rather, this is a case where the lower court specifically said, too, the motion the defendant asked this court to vacate its order of March 31st, 2021, and reinstate the case to the active docket. And so it's more akin to McEwen and Green than in Capital, because there was no intervening manner making the June 25th an independent, final, and appealable order.
And so your argument as a result of that is there had to be an appeal of the March 31 order within 30 days.
Correct.
Now, if we would determine that March 31 order was not a final order because it did not dispose of the counterclaim, where does that leave you?
Well, then I guess we would still say the case, when the court looked at the motion to reinstate, it denied that. And so that order, which is not final and appealable, would go back. Did he appeal the March 31st order dismissing the entire case? And so we would say that they didn't appeal in a timely fashion, so the court doesn't have jurisdiction.
But if we say it's not a final order, there was no appeal necessary within 30 days of the March 31 order, right?
Right.
So where does that leave us then? What do we do?
I think we would argue that within the inherent power of the court to look at this, because it happened in the term, it determined it wasn't going to restate it due to a lack of prosecution by all parties.
Wasn't going to reinstate the complaint.
Right. Well, reinstate the entire case. That's what they asked for. Their counterclaim, our claim, they asked for all of it to be put back on the docket.
So if they had specifically asked only to reinstate the counterclaim,
correct,
then the motion should have been granted?
Well, then it's still within the power of the court to say, this case has been on file since 2016. Absolutely nothing's been done in the case since you filed your amended complaint in 2018, with the exception of mediation in 2019 in March. Nothing from 2019 to almost 2.5 years later has anything happened in the case. And therefore, in the issue of judicial economy, we're not going to reinstate the case. Everybody sat on their hands too long.
So then that would be a new determination, though, solely as to the counterclaim.
Well, we're arguing this all together, but
and what we're trying to figure out is, where's the final order and where's the 30 days, and is there even a final order?
And our contention would be March 31st is the final order, because he was put on notice that the entire case is going to be dismissed. I realize the order to cause talks about the plaintiff's complaint, but if there was any discrepancy, what should have the J-Ton done? I say you do a motion to alter amend and say, well, where is my counterclaim? Is that dismissed as well? or a motion to set for trial within the time that if it's not in your favor, you would still have the power to appeal.
But the motion to alter or amend would not have come after the March 31st order because that only addressed the complaint, right?
I would say, if I was representing Judge Hunt, I would have responded to the order to show cause because I would think that the entire case is going to be dismissed based on the order to show cause.
But the order to show cause, again, I know we're kind of going in circles here.
Right,
and, so and we're perhaps confusing it more than is necessary, but it was only directed to the plaintiff.
I think that it's directed to the plaintiff is the person, since you brought the case, you need to take the action. But when it says the entire case is going to be dismissed, the entire case, then I think it puts both parties on notice. If you want to keep your claim alive, you need to take some action to this order to show cause. It doesn't solely rest on the plaintiff. I think it's directed at the plaintiff since you're the one who brought it, but that doesn't relieve the defendant of any obligation to respond to that order to show cause if they want to keep their action alive as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weeks.
Thank you very much.
The case will be taken under submission. Parties are excused.
Thank you.